Hello, everyone. Quick update on this before we start this week's show. After speaking with Jennifer Chatton and discussing how the fellas at Vaughn are now being isolated from each other, Josh in Wilmington, Michael in a higher security part of Smyrna, we learned Tuesday evening, I guess. We recorded this Tuesday morning. We learned that Jennifer's account that she has signed up for and paid for to be able to text message through the tablet with folks at the Department of Corrections has been blocked for all of the people that she was communicating with in Smyrna at Vaughn. So after isolating Josh in Gander Hill, now Jennifer's been blocked from even communicating with whoever is left at Vaughn. This is retaliatory. We're going to keep following this story. You'll get more and more, but anyway, here's this week's show. From the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast, I'm Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. I'm joined in the studio today by my friends, Medina. Hello, Medina.
Hey.
And super producer Carl, of course. As promised, we do have an update on the Vaughn fellas and their situation. But unfortunately, it's not the update that I thought we were going to do. So joining us on the line right now is Joshua Chaitin's mom, Jennifer. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hanging in there. I'm good.
So can you give us a rundown of what you know happened this week and what the situation is? I don't know how much information you got since we spoke yesterday, but what's going on?
Okay, so I talked to Josh yesterday morning, and everything was fine. He told me he would give me a call back later in the day. Around 11:15, a call came through. I didn't recognize the number, but I picked it up, and it was Michael Fields doing his family gave him a three-way to me, and he said, "Miss Jennifer, they just handcuffed Josh, took him out of the building, and the COs are in his cell packing his stuff." And I immediately started to panic. I said, did they say why or where they were taking him? They said that he was talking to too many people and that they were moving him out of state. That's what they told him. So I immediately, you know, I contacted you. I contacted Larry. I also contacted Miss Darby and also Tanya Whittle. And I did call the governor's office also, because I had spoke to the governor a couple weeks ago and he had informed me that there was any retaliation to call his office immediately. So that is what I did. I kind of just had to sit and wait by that point. Everyone was working on it. I knew everyone was calling people to find out what was going on, which I appreciate. And I finally got, something told me to check VineLink after all these hours went by. And I did. And that's when I realized that they had moved him to Howard R. Young or Gander Hill.
Now, that's a system you can get in to kind of check and, to see what's happening.
Yes, it's all 50 states have it. It's called VineLink, and you basically just go on there. It's really designed for victims, but anyone can, you know, check up on an inmate, see when they're getting released. It also tells you court dates and that kind of stuff, and it also tells you where they're at. So it said Howard R. Young. So it was probably 15 minutes after that when Larry Lambert called me back. And he said, do you know that he's, you know, at Howard R. Young? And I said, I just found out within minutes. And he said, okay, well, while coincidentally, while I was on the phone with him, Josh called me. And so they were able to talk. Josh said at that point that he was still in holding. They hadn't moved him to a tier cell yet. And that he was okay. He said, mentally and physically, I'm okay. So Larry continued to say that he did call the DOC to find out why he had been moved. And the DOC, like they do so well, they lied. And they said that it wasn't retaliation. They moved him because other inmates were scared. So we both, like Josh, me, and Larry both were laughing because we're like, scared of what?
Right.
Air conditioning? Because that's what we got them. Everything they were doing was positive. So Larry said, well, we know they're lying. We know, you know, the inmates are not scared because Josh is trying to implement stuff. And when that happened, everyone was so happy. Like when I spoke to Josh, he said, there's 300 men in that building. He said, I think I hugged all of them. They all came to me and said, in the history of this prison, there had never been one, a state rep to walk through it, and two, air conditioning. And we made that happen within 2 months. And so they were really happy about that. So moving forward, Josh was able to call me last night because he was worried about my mental health. And I said I was good now because I knew he was okay. But I had still been talking to some of the guys. Nadine called me later on, said that they took him from where he was. Now, so people know, they're in a building called W Building. It's a work building. It's the minimum, it's the lowest security. It's minimum security. These guys have, they come and go as they please. They're single man cells. They go to work, they go to programming. And basically, they're, you know, free to roam because they are minimum security. And Nadim, whose name is Michael Fields, called me and he said, Miss Jennifer, I need your help. They just moved me to G tier. And I said, you got to be more specific because I don't know what that means. He said that that is the lowest of the lowest. It's a two-man cell he's in now, and he doesn't have all those freedoms that he had before. And he said, I don't know why. And I said, well, it seems like to me that they're trying to separate the four of you guys that are doing this dream initiative.
Yeah.
And I said, because the DOC doesn't want positive change, because then they have to come out of their pocket. And which is sad, because they get federal funding. And they're not doing what they're supposed to. Between the next thing we were working on was to get the mold out of there. People are being poisoned by this mold that's everywhere. And they don't give the guys there the proper cleaning supplies to clean it. So it's always there. So that was our next step. We were going to start working on getting rid of that. So fast forward, last night around 9 o'clock, I get a phone call. Coincidentally, my nephew's also incarcerated there, and he's in that W building also. So he called me and he said, Aunt Jen, this must be the worst day of my life. They moved my cousin for no reason, and now we're flooded. I said, what do you mean you're flooding? He said, it's not only pouring down here, raining, but a pipe burst.
No, no. I can tell you that. Yeah, I drove to Dover for a meeting last night with Tanya Whittle, actually, who you mentioned. Shout out, Tanya, for driving me. We drove through some of the worst thunderstorms I think I've ever seen in my life up Route 1. We saw accidents. We saw accidents happening. We saw somebody spun out in the grass median. So the idea that, Smyrna got hit real hard, plus, you know, mechanical problems, I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, it was. He said it was horrible. And I'm on the phone, and I can hear all these, like, all the men. Like, where he's at, he said there's 14 cells. So there's 14 men, and each cell was flooding. He said it was coming out the door jam. One guy's ceiling looked like it was about to collapse. And I said, well, what are they doing? I said, are they doing anything? And he said, the COs walked by and said, looks like it's going to be a long night for you guys. And that was it. Left the tier. So I said, that's very unacceptable. All your stuff is getting ruined. Your food, your bedding, your clothing. And he said, he put me on hold for a second. He came back. He said, do you believe what they just did? I said, what? He said, they brought us one squeegee, one mop, and one bucket for 14 cells. And I kind of like laughed because I was like, you got to be kidding. He said, Aunt Jen, I can't make this stuff up. That's what they just did. And so once they moved Josh, it was just like one thing after another. It was Michael getting moved, and then it was the flooding. And I did talk to Josh this morning. He's okay. He's on at Howard R. Young. There's the old side, the new side, they call it. He's on the new side. He told me that he was waiting to be classified today, and that they were looking for a job for him, and that it was the warden who got him moved. And I said, they had just spoke to the warden last week, and the warden said to go forward with their dream initiative, and that, you know, he didn't see a problem with it. So all these guys are now, you know, talking about what a great guy this warden is. And I said, well, no, I think he just told you what he wanted you to hear.
Mm.
That's right.
And that was exactly what happened, because yesterday they just got up and moved on. So Josh said he's just going to take advantage of the programs that they have there that they didn't have in Smyrna. And he's going to wait. He's got 2 years, 10 months left on his sentence. He also has a 35A, which is correction of a legal sentence, in the court right now. And he also has his commutation in, which if it passes the parole board, it goes to the governor. So we're just waiting that possibly he could be coming home sooner, which is, you know, our hope. But
I wish I was shocked by all of this. I'm extremely angry. You know, I've covered different sort of prison stories and talked to people about it, and it really is nasty business. They're, you know, the men are being, you know, tortured in their cells by heat first, now water, poison, and black mold. The Department of Corrections can't even come up with a legit sort of reason to move someone. Totally sort of bogus. You know, obviously, if there were issues around other inmates, you know, we would have known about that, because we're in communication with, you know, especially the folks who are doing the Dream Initiative. So I'm pretty furious about it. I know that when I talk like this, people think that I'm just hyperbolic and I'm gone off on a rant and doing this and that. And I'm not. This is just completely unacceptable bullshit. I'm glad that Larry was on top of it. You know, I had spoken to him a couple weeks ago, and I knew that he was. I don't even know, you know, I don't even know what the appetite would be at the Department of Corrections to be like, hey, what are you doing? Like, are they in a position where they have to answer to you and Larry as elected officials? Even if they come up with some bogus thing, I mean, I'm sure they have sort of carte blanche to do as they please if they think that that's the right thing to do. I mean, do we have any sort of remedies through sort of official channels to figure out what's happening here?
I mean, that's a great question. I don't know. I'm sitting here taking notes. And you know, I was in contact with Larry back during the heat wave as well, and was really impressed with his, like, we were all asking questions, and then we found out from him, he's like, I'm on my way now. And we were like, oh, okay, like, great. And like, let us know what you learn, you know, because I've been on one visit so far, and you know, there's always that vibe that if you go on a scheduled visit, you're going to see what they want you to see, kind of thing. So I know we all really appreciated Larry popping up and just, you know, no, I would like to go and visit. I'd like to see what's going on and like not get the dog and pony show. And I was also honestly surprised to hear that they came up with the remedy so quickly. And I think I was going to say Aunt Jen, because you're Aunt Jen in my head now. Miss Jennifer had said like, that's through the work and advocacy of you all. And like making your voices heard and making sure that the folks behind bars voices are heard as well. So, but to your question about like holding them accountable, I'm not sure what avenues we have besides like continuously asking for more information and introducing legislation. And so I'd have to better understand what is outlined as being the rights of incarcerated folks to know if those rights are being, you know, infringed upon. I would assume that you should be able to, that you have the right to be in a cell that is not flooding. Like, that seems pretty basic to me. And even just the energy that's being, you know, like the, oh, you're gonna have a long night, like that kind of like antagonistic energy, I think is really unprofessional and unacceptable. And I don't know how you know, mandate people are polite, but that it's just assholery, which yeah. Like,
I think what you said too is kind of telling. And I think that potentially, it's conjecture, I mean, we'll never know, but the fact that Larry went down and did an unannounced visit, the fact that Larry wanted to meet with inmates with no COs or officials in the room to sort of suss out what was bullshit and what was real, the fact that there was a remedy at least to the air conditioning situation relatively quickly, considering what we normally do, I think all of that combined probably said, we got to break this up. Because they're continuing with the Dream Initiative. They posted something online that we posted in the show notes last week, explaining their organizing, explaining what they're trying to do. And I think because it was getting traction, because it had success, and because these men were advocating for themselves, something had to be done about it, and that's what was done. And I think that's the big thing: is how do you not have the right to organize the people that you're living with, even in that situation, and advocate for yourself. Yeah. I just don't see how that is a problem, but I'm sure it was quite embarrassing for officials, you know?
It's like, I disagree with the behavior that they took, but I'm not surprised at all that they see it as a problem that guys are organizing, right? Like, that is anathema to how they run these facilities, right? They don't want people organizing and working together to achieve a goal. Like, I mean, that's not Delaware DOC. That's like corrections writ large in this country. Right. They want to isolate individuals. They, you know, they don't want people fighting each other necessarily, but they kind of do, right? Like, I'm sure they'd rather that to people uniting and organizing and working together. And I mean, I don't know how we can protect folks' ability to do that, but when you first reached out to me about this, to me it sounds like a violation of First Amendment rights. And I don't know what your First Amendment rights are when you are behind bars or even just in the system. But like, that's what jumped out to me. I'm not a lawyer, but I think there should be conversations had with lawyers about that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think the violent aspect or the fights or, you know, just isolating people and having them sort of mad at each other, at least, you know, that sort of, that validates the idea that We can be assholes. We can be not polite. We can control. You know, we can then be violent too because it's a quote unquote scary place. So yeah, I'm sure that while it's that's more dangerous. It sort of gives them the opportunity to say, see, it's dangerous. It's violent. We have to act like this. But when people actually out of a spirit of solidarity and love for each other, just try to improve their condition a little bit. You know, that's nipped right in the bud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you describe it that way, it goes beyond corrections.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
First of all, there's something of the Eighth Amendment. That's cruel and unusual punishment. And that's where they're living in. So it is against their Eighth Amendment, everything that the prison's doing. Okay. The reason they had to move so fast was I contacted the ACLU. The ACLU, along a woman from there, along with an attorney from there named Jason, showed up there to do a meeting with Josh. They had the meeting. The guy wasn't, they weren't even out of the parking lot yet when the DOC called them, a deputy commissioner, and said, "You're getting ready to sue us, aren't you?" And Jason said, "Absolutely." And that's when they said, "Well, can we have a meeting?" So Jason called me and told me about this interaction and that they were going to have a meeting. He said, "We're going to give them a chance." He said, "But if they don't follow through, I'm going to give them 3 weeks. If they don't follow through, there's going to be no more questions asked. I'm going right to the court." And it was Josh and several other people that would be in this lawsuit. And that is why the DOC moved quick, because if they didn't do anything within 3 weeks, they were being sued.
Mm.
Yeah, I heard that story from another attorney, not with the ACLU, but was, I guess, also, it was an attorney at the Innocence Project who was familiar with that meeting. And I heard basically the same story, that the DOC called right afterwards and said, are we getting ready to be sued? And the attorney said, yeah, probably. Yes. And so, yeah, that is also most likely. I'm glad you brought that up. That is a huge impetus behind this, I'm gathering. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that there's so much more that needs to be done. I mean, when Josh told me that the infirmary, where people are dying on hospice, had no AC, and those poor nurses are up there sweating, running around, putting ice packs on people who are dying, that's horrible. I talked to Fennell yesterday. He said, this place does not care. We got men on our tier right now that have cancer, that are dying, and there's no room in the infirmary. The cancer is running rampant in there from the black mold. And they don't send them out, so these men have been in there for years, and it's, you know, it's now stage 4. And he said, there's also a guy, he said he has a hernia as big as a football. And they won't do nothing. So with that being said, the whole system needs to be changed, because that is sad. That is sad.
I will say, too, your systemic critique was exactly what I was getting ready to say. I had a conversation last night with Tanya, who is an expert in, you know, the corrections end of justice advocacy, who's taught in the prisons and had advocated for the compassionate release, all that stuff. And, you know, there's a commutation process that people have gone through and been approved through the process. But because we had, a terrible governor, now our dipshit mayor, has kind of, denied commutations that were approved all the way through the process. So I'm calling on Meyer now as the governor to pick that back up. You know, a lot of those things roll through the governor's office, and the governor has executive power to grease the rails, so to speak. and let's, you know, let's go, you know, so at least the folks who can get early release can get out of that situation. So yeah, that's another point. And had you heard back? I know you said you had called the governor's office because I know the governor had called you. Have you heard back from them at all?
No. Yes, I talked to the governor right around the same time. In fact, it was the same day that the ACLU went out to talk to Josh. That evening, the governor called me. And he basically said that he had talked to the warden and he was issuing $2 million from them to put an AC unit in. And, you know, I thanked him. And I said, I did hear some wonderful things about you. And he said, not yet. I've only been in here for 5 months. I got to prove myself. And I said, well, if you can get this done and get what needs to be done with the DOC, you've already done that in my book. And, you know, I discussed other things with him, paperwork that was sent to him that he said he never received and so forth. And so I'm working on that now with his office. They were supposed to call me back yesterday. Because there was two things going on. There was the fact that I didn't know where my child was, and that was total retaliation. And the second thing is that Josh filed his commutation back in February. He sent his commutation in. There's two parts to that. The second part is the prison has to send their part, his file over. So Josh went in to talk to the counselor about that. And the guy he never saw this counselor before, so he didn't know him. So Josh walked in, and the guy was very rude to Josh. He said, you're going to sit the F down, you're going to shut up, and you're not going to speak until you're spoken to. And Josh said, why are you talking to me like this? And he said, I think you know why, Mr. Chatton. And Josh said, well, I'm not going to tolerate it. So he stood up. He walked over to another counselor that he knew. He asked for what time it was. The counselor told him it was 10:25. And he said, I just want to know what time it was so I can tell people what time this man disrespected me. And he walked out. So that being said, we don't know if everything in Josh's file was sent. We don't know if any of it was sent. We don't know if he put anything negative in there, and we don't know if he took the positive stuff out. So I have the governor's office working on that now to make sure that my son's file is complete. I mean, he didn't even get his GED. He got his diploma. I paid for a school in Florida to correspond with him through the mail. He only needed 3 credits for a diploma, and that's what he wanted, and he got it. He's done every program the DOC down there had to offer. He's also done plenty of classes, culinary arts. He's done automotive. Like, there was nothing else. There was nothing else for him to do there. So now he was just working. But I want to make sure that all that stuff made it to the parole board. And I have the governor's office checking in on that to see if it was a complete file or if it was even sent. Because Josh walked away, this guy could have not sent it at all.
Yeah, people like to take timestamps of this show and send them around, and it's usually because I've said something to insult somebody. But I think somebody should take a timestamp of it right now and send it to Meyer. He may be listening. He used to listen, but now he's extra busy. Maybe he can't do it anymore. But we need answers about this. We want to make sure that not just for Josh's sake, but just for everybody's sake. You know, this needs to be cleaned up both figuratively and literally. And there's nothing else. All we can do is continue to get people's stories, continue to report it out, and continue to be very, very clear about it. I really appreciate what you're doing, Jennifer, and what Josh is doing, and I told him so. I told Fennell and Michael too. This is incredibly important because it basically destroys the fake narrative that the Department of Corrections is going to always sort of, you know, is always going to put out there about somebody's a problem. This isn't a problem. Everybody's always complaining about nothing. They're making it up. No, you're making it up. I thought it was so savvy to sort of ask another person in the room what time it was to sort of indicate, like, yeah, this really happened, actually.
Yeah.
And I know all the details of it. Like, I've done, he did a timestamp. Josh did a timestamp. Yeah,
document. I mean, that's what they have to do.
Yeah. And so let's not insult everyone's intelligence and pretend that this is all cooked up and this is all like guys inside that are making up stories. It's not. It's true. So I don't want anybody's intelligence insulted about, you know, oh, he was causing a problem, so he needed to be moved to Wilmington. You know, that's, no one's going to fall for that. So that needs to be perfectly clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was not a problem. He was, when Fennell called me, I talked to Fennell last night and I asked him if everything was okay there, because I had gotten a message from another inmate that they were trying to keep people calm. And I said, calm? What's going on? So Fennell called me and I said, is everything okay? And at first he was like, yeah. And I said, Fennell, you can be honest. And he said, okay. He was like, your son was hope. He was the light in here. These guys had never, in all these years, had anybody that they could talk to that was so positive to help them get through the day, to implement air conditioning when no one had ever tried to do that before and succeed. And he said, so a lot of these guys are upset, and they let the COs know that they had no right to move him. And the COs are getting worried. And I said, well, I don't want anybody hurt. I want everyone to be calm. That's not going to help anything. I said, and Josh isn't even there. He's somewhere else, and he wouldn't want that. And in fact, when I talked to Josh, he said, you need to tell everyone just to relax, just to chill, keep doing what they're doing. And the other guys, tell them, you know, things are going to happen. Like, Fennell and Hayward and Michael are going to make sure that changes are made. And I don't know, Josh said something about Michael might have got moved because he was complaining too much about the mice. That he was catching his own mice and they were climbing up on his bunk. And these things can bite you. It's germs. It's more germs on top of the black mold. And for the DOC just to hand inmates mouse traps.
This is
when you get federal funding. Where is this money at? Like, Rob, that's what I want to know. I want to know what they're doing with the money. Because it's obviously they're not fixing anything or doing anything within the prison if all this is happening. And that's, someone's pockets are getting lined because it's not going to where it's supposed to be. They should have an exterminator there. They should have AC in all these buildings to find out that the building doesn't have AC either. And the most important place, the infirmary. For them to take an AC out of the infirmary to give to the canines because a dog died. I'm not saying dogs are not important. I love animals. I'm a dog lover. But you took it away from dying people. Like, none of it makes, it just doesn't make sense to me. What they could have done is just got a new air conditioner for the dog. You get all this federal funding.
And they get state funding, too. I mean,
yeah.
I didn't sit through their presentation and requests, but I mean, maybe that's a project for the calls to go through their requests and see why are they not, if they don't have the funds, why aren't they requesting funds for these things like this? I mean, I just wrote down complaining too much about the mice. That's a crazy thing to like, I'm really struggling to process how you could be punished for complaining about your living conditions with mice. And expected to catch them. Like, that's nuts. I don't know how to, like, what?
Yeah. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for continuing to be sort of our conduit into this situation. I hope to be able to talk to Josh again relatively soon to see how he's settling in. I also hope that all the other fellas hope that Michael and Fennell really continue their efforts and know that we're behind them on that too. I know, you know, the men there are probably extremely disappointed and angry that this happened. It makes perfect sense. But just remember the way that these guys went about their work and got that air conditioning in there and got attention to it and were able to speak with Larry. They did that through solidarity and kindness and friendship and love for each other. And so that works. It worked. It's proven to work. Now they're going to try to do everything they can to create obstacles. And we'll do everything we can to expose those obstacles and break them down.
You know, well, they never wanted to. Everything they're doing is positive. So for one second, this is what I told Larry. And I said, think about this for a second. Before the air conditioner got put in, they were told to leave the tier doors open. Now, these tier doors have air conditioning on the other side. It's where the COs sit. Okay? And they were told to leave them open so the guys can get a little bit of relief from the heat. And this went on for a month. These doors were left open. And it was a biggest data breach, security breach rather, that the DOC had ever done. By leaving these doors open with 350 inmates that could have bum rushed those doors, the COs go in there and go to sleep at night. So they're in there, you know, in the air sleeping with these doors open. And not one person out of 350 men tried to leave, tried to hurt a CO, tried to do anything. And that was because the four of them from the Dream Initiative told everybody, they're doing this to help us. Let's not ruin it. You know, we're going to show them that we are good people and that we're not animals. And I think that was wonderful. That there was, and like Fennell said, you have people in this building alone that one person killed this person's loved one. And they don't fight because the four of these guys got everyone together to say, let's do this. Let's make change. Let's stop the hate. And there's no reason that we would need to go through these doors. We know we're not allowed on the other side of these doors. They're doing this as a favor to give us some air. And I think that is remarkable. It really is. Because that was a security breach. Those doors don't stay open. But they kept them open for a month without one problem. So I think that says a lot that what these guys are doing and able to keep over 300 men under control, just the four of them. That nothing like that happened. And that the COs felt safe enough that they could put their feet up and go to sleep in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Right.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for taking the time again. I know that we'll stay in touch and continue to report out this information, continue to find people to speak out here in the legislature, in the community, and all of it. So thanks for continuing to keep in touch, and we'll keep this conversation going.
Absolutely, Rob. Thank you so much. It was great meeting you. and everybody. And thanks for everything that you do, Rob. It's appreciative.
I really appreciate that. It's my pleasure, actually. So thank you very much.
And someday soon, Josh is going to be sitting right beside you.
That sounds good to me. I told him when we spoke, it's anybody who comes on remotely, no matter what, has an open door policy. So I can't wait for that day.
That's wonderful. Everyone have a blessed day and be safe. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
What I was going to say is, you mentioned that it dawned on you somehow that when I call people by the wrong name, that I'm doing it on purpose. Like, of course I'm doing it on purpose.
Yeah, well, I mean,
like, it's a comedy show.
Yeah, but sometimes you it's a comedy show now.
Yes. Well, now that Jennifer hung up, it is.
Okay.
I said, look, sometimes it's 60 minutes, sometimes it's Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I don't think
that's fair.
I think it's fucking stupid to explain every time we're like, this show is a satire show.
Yeah.
This show is a straight interview. You listen to it and you use your cognitive fucking skills to figure out which one it is.
Okay, so you don't have to intro the interview with Miss Jennifer with the tick, 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 tick.
No, I don't think so.
And we don't.
I think people can
right now for this part. Do we need the?
Yeah, you ring a bell like a goddamn clown, and people don't even understand what you're doing. No, I mean here. The other thing is, well, first of all, let me just finish the thought. Maybe people really don't realize, they can't use their cognitive skills to realize what it is I'm doing. I always sort of assume that they kind of knew, and they just wanted to pretend like they didn't. Like they wanted to take. Like if I insult someone,
well, like
or
sometimes
whatever.
It's so subtle. Like to be fair, right? Like I was listening to an episode last week. I think it was last week's episode, the Vindicated episode.
Yeah, with Laura.
Great Sturgeon. Episode.
Thank you.
Laughed out loud multiple times, as did my husband. But there was like a section where you were talking about Tim Dukes, and you.
I kept calling him David Dukes.
David Dukes. And like when you said David Dukes, I didn't immediately recognize who David Dukes was. So I'm like, oh, it's someone I don't know. And like Laura's, I think that's kind of how she responded too. Like, I just don't know who we're talking about. Okay. And then with more information, you're like, oh, wait, you're talking about this person.
Right.
This is their name. And you're like, no, I know their name. But sometimes you also do the thing where you're like choosing to not know a name.
Right. Yep.
And like I listened to the episode and I thought there was a moment where I was like, oh, you just misspoke, because you didn't, like, the delivery is so deadpan.
Thank
that
you.
Like
I appreciate that.
You're like, no one's gonna correct him.
From a fellow comedian, I appreciate that.
Yeah, but sometimes like you know.
Yeah, it's supposed to be deadpan. Like if I like there's context clues, like the bell. Should I start honking a horn or wearing like a big red nose like a clown?
No, but the way that you do it, sometimes you do it in a way where it's obvious that you're joking.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing. Like if sometimes it's obvious that you're joking and then sometimes it's not, then it's like, oh, let me just help Rob, he misspoke. And you're like, no, that's the point. And it's like, oh, okay. Like,
well, that makes it, but when people kind of miss it, and that's also kind of funny.
That is kind of funny.
Because then because then it's explained to me, and then 2 minutes later, I'll just do it again.
Well, like, that's how I knew you were joking last episode. Because you just kept doing it, and I was like, okay, he doesn't care.
No, I don't care. And again, yeah, I do it deadpan because the only thing I sometimes question myself about is I know that some of these jokes, like I know, are like specifically like for Bill or something, and I'm like one person will get it.
Oh yeah, like the inside jokes.
Yeah, sometimes they're a little insidery, and I try to sort of stay away from them if I can. But for the most part,
when you do a Trump impression, like you just like go into it and you don't tell anyone that's what you're doing. And to be honest, it's not a great Trump impression.
No, it's horrible.
But like. You're just like, we do, we know, people know this.
Oh, I do that.
Like, you do that, like.
I do that, like, hey, I'm doing this. That goofy. It's sort of like the goofy. That's the voice I put on when I'm doing, like, if I was doing, like, the Department of Corrections. Hey, we moved him. He's scaring other inmates because they're scared of the air conditioning. Like, I do that.
What,
like,
is
the
that?
Inmates are scared of the air conditioning because it just makes it, whoever, like, it's the, like the DOC spokesperson, who I think the DOC, it's, he's either the spokesperson or the legislative aide, or maybe that's the same person. I know he's a huge bunker head. So I know that he's probably listening to this, and we're making fun of, like, you saying that Josh was moved because people were scared of getting air conditioning. Like, what does that even mean?
There's no way anyone said that. Like, they must have come up with a different line, because that's just
so
bad.
Sense.
Like, that's just so bad. But hey, I mean, I've seen some pretty bad lines this year. I should have prepared, like, a, like, donkey of the session list, and just done, like, the 10 dumbest moments this year.
The Eeyore trophy.
There were so many, like, so many dumb things. I don't know if you watched any of the interview I did with Coast TV about Stell Parker Selby's absence.
I didn't. I did see, like, the day after where the reporter came in and interviewed you, I saw her sitting across the desk, and I almost sent a picture because I have a similar picture of me talking to you across the desk, and I'm like, oh, look, we're doing the same thing.
Oh, look, we're both interviewing her in her office.
We're both with the news.
The media. Yeah.
But what did you say?
I mean, I know, said a lot, but...
I mean, I caught the... I didn't watch the interview, but I read this. Like, I know that you...
You caught the highlights.
Yeah, I know what your take was. Like, sort of similar to my take. Like, you can't let this thing go on and on and on. You have to expect there's going to be a real problem.
Yeah, and, like, the dumb part about it, I think, is, like, if you're letting an issue become an issue, maybe prepare for, like, having to deal with it. like I in no way am I encouraging people to cover up scandal like that, or, like, perpetuate an undemocratic response to someone's absence. But if you're going to do that, I don't know, maybe sit at a table with people with brains and come up with a way to deal with it. You know, if people ask questions, this is what we say. If people show up and record, this is what we do. Like, something. I'm doing the voice you do now.
See? It is funny. We're gonna
come up with something. Like, it was such amateur hour, and it's embarrassing. And what bothered me most, honestly, was seeing how it was impacting the staff, and, like, seeing kids who, like, are just trying to help their constituents that they work for. I did the job before. I know what it entails. They're just trying to get, you know, people solutions to problems that they're dealing with, and they're having to deal with this news crew, and, like, it's not DC. We're not used to people rolling up with video cameras, like, and that really bothered me. But now I'm all, like, wound up again. What was I trying to? Right.
The donkey awards
moments. Yeah. So, maybe in, like, April, when they first started showing up to the building and recording, I'm at my desk on the floor, and I noticed this video camera pointed at me, and I'm like, why, like, what, did I do something? Like, why is this video camera in here? It's not normal for there to be video on the floor. And so I asked someone, like, do you know what station they're with? And they're like, no, let me go check. And they came back, and they're like, oh, it's Coast TV. They're recording Stell's desk. And I'm like, oh, right. Her desk is right behind me, like, in that, like, you know, in that line of sight.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not the subject. I'm just in the shot. Yeah. And, like, right after that, we finish the floor debate for the day. A member walks up to me and a couple others and is like, be careful, because they're in here recording Stell's seat. These horrible people, or terrible people, whatever adjective. And, like, be careful what you say, because they're out here recording and stuff. And I'm like, okay, like, I'm not...
Like, what is it?
I'm not part of whatever nonsense you have. I don't... What? Like, I'm not afraid of the media. Like, so many of my colleagues are just afraid of the media. They are scared they're going to get taken out of context, or they're going to get painted as what they are.
Yeah, they're afraid
and
of
so
the
I'm
truth.
So I'm just like, okay, like, it's weird. It's like, you know, we were walking down the street in Philly, and someone's like, the end is nigh. And you're like, okay, I'm just going to... pop into Auntie Anne's and get my pretzel. Like, I'm going to go about my day. But in that conversation, this member then is like, you know, they're recording her. her seat. They're recording her empty parking spot because we all have like these, you know, little placards or whatever. And, you know, and suggest that we should take turns parking so that they couldn't take the video. And so I said that in this interview. So pretty much everyone knows, like, amongst the caucus, whose idea it was, because they brought it up multiple times, which, again, it's a dumb idea. And also, it's extra dumb to offer a conspiracy to someone like me. This is not my first time here. Like, I've been here for 5 years, and they still say the craziest stuff to me.
They can't help it.
Like, they don't realize how dumb it is and how, like, when I was reading Carl's article about how Democrats are afraid of democracy, I'm just like, I forgot about half the stuff they did. And there's stuff that's not even on the list. Like, you know, like,
we had to edit it out. Carl actually wrote 80,000 words on the dumb stuff they did, but we had to scale it back.
Well, we don't want to drive the cost of energy up, you know.
Yeah, I
don't know if the servers can handle all of
this. This machine go burr.
But it's just like, if you're gonna drag it out, here's the other part I just never understood. I still don't. You're gonna drag it out for 6 months. Why wouldn't you drag it out another couple weeks just to give Ilana a fighting chance? Like, why would they do that?
Yeah.
I don't get it. Like, the Republican candidate's been campaigning for over a year. And then you just, like, what? You got this marathon you're going, you just give up right before the finish line? Like, guys, you have the control here of the situation.
It's a classic Brandon. They did a classic Brandon.
It is like a Brandon.
Pulled out too late.
Wow. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
That's our thing, huh?
I didn't really think about it either until you just described, like, the opponent that's running and had been running.
Yeah, it is kind of just like a, wow, I guess that's just, yeah, when you hate democracy, doomed to have this.
The thing I don't get is what's missing from all of this is something very simple that I should give her credit for it, because Jessica Raine is the one who pointed it out to me. You know, there's this huge push now in RD20, and everybody's going down to Sarah McBride and the leadership team. What a dynamic photo they took down there. What those three are fucking dynamos. I'm surprised. I'm surprised we don't have everything good in this state when I see that Democratic leadership in the House. Whew. It's like incredible. Anyway, and everybody's down there. Kobe, we saw you down there. We know. Look, you're party guy. You do what you do.
Look, I got a constitutional amendment I'm trying to get passed. So
yeah.
Pick up as many seeds as we can. Like, yeah. I'm not.
But here's the thing that Jess pointed out to me. So there's this huge campaign push now. There's these two people running, and they want to hold the seat, and everybody's focused on it. So what does Ilana stand for? Like, what's her big issues? What's her ideology? What's her outlook on things? How does she want to? What is she going to do? Like, it's just like, hey, here's the Democrat, let's go. For what? What are you doing? Like, for what? What's your? What
not
can be
being
expect?
A Republican? Is that not?
Yeah,
enough?
That's it.
I think that's enough.
I guess.
I mean, To be honest, I haven't looked into the Republican at all. I just know she's a Republican, so.
But I mean,
I hope she loses.
I guess I don't. That's the thing. Like, they continually do this. And that's actually one of the things I wanted to talk about. Maybe this is a good segue into it, is our absolute man in New York, Zohran Mamdani.
Yes.
And because people keep asking me, we haven't really talked about it that much.
The Zomentum.
Carl and I briefly discussed it a few weeks ago. But people are coming and asking me, like, just in regular conversations, like, what I think. And what I think is we've been completely vindicated. Once again, like, if you're real,
yeah,
and you don't equivocate on every fucking thing, like, oh yeah, I said this, but I didn't mean it. I deleted my tweet. I said this. This is what I meant. If you want to run around and say, right, that I want to globalize the Intifada, No, what I actually said was X. But I'm not backing down from it either.
Right.
I'm telling you this is
ten
what it is.
Down.
No, never back down. You don't have to equivocate. You can believe in stuff. And you can give people reasons that you believe in it. And people like that, actually.
What?
People like it.
What?
And that was the funny thing about, like, well, why isn't there a centrist? Because people don't like that. Like, they're like, well, what if we change our messaging? Yeah, it's not about the message. It is about the message, but it's about people believing that he believes in it.
Yeah.
Because if you're a genuine, authentic. Yeah.
Yeah. And
so when you
just
act like a fake, like the people we were just talking about, people don't believe you. And you struggle in the political landscape because you look like a liar.
But these people are just, they're just boring. Like, I don't, like, Cuomo, like, I watched one of his videos yesterday because he put this video out. He's trying to be on the street, do a video, you know, no tie, no suit, jacket, just the collared shirt.
Short sleeve, too. Short
rolled
sleeve.
Up sleeve, yeah, or whatever. And I'm like, okay, like, let's see what this is all about. But the reason it's on my feed is because it got ratioed.
Zoran.
Oh my God! The ratio on that tweet
and all
made
it was
me laugh
Zoran.
Out loud.
All it was underneath that video, the Mamdani, whether he did it or the campaign did it, just basically put like donate to the campaign,
and it got like thousands of likes. But like I watched the video, I didn't watch the whole thing because it's boring. It's like cringe. It gives me like secondhand embarrassment watching him walk around, try to talk to people, try to be normal, try to act like he cares. He's like, yeah, you know, the primary, I can't even do it.
Are you trying to do an Italian?
He has like a
weird
drawl.
This is anti-Italian discrimination.
No, he sounds like if you took like a C-level character from a mafia movie and put them through an AI generator. Like, he doesn't sound like a main character. He doesn't sound normal either. And he's like, you know, I'm not even going to try to do it. I'm just going to talk normal. Imagine that I'm talking like Cuomo, okay? But he's like, the primary didn't go how I wanted it to go. And, you know, my dad always told me, get back up. And he's like, shake people's hands. And you can see how uncomfortable each person in every interaction looks. Like, if you see Zoran, they put a video out last week where they're trying to do a video. And he can't because everyone is coming up to him and trying to shake his hand, take a picture with him, tell him I voted for you. Oh my God, I can't believe it's you. Cuomo's going up to people and they're like putting their hand out, but also putting their other hand out to keep him from touching them more.
Yeah, it's like, here's my hand, but that's as far as we're going
to go. Yeah, like he goes to grab this guy's elbow and the guy's like, no, like don't do that. No. It's like, you're doing too much. Stop. What is wrong with these people? Where are we finding these freaks?
Yeah.
Like, where are the normal people?
And they so want to be, like, I guess they just don't want to accept it. They want to be this fake sort of shell in the political realm, but also want to be, like, liked. And you can't act like that and be liked.
Right.
Like, you can't act like Andrew Cuomo or Mimi or Claire Schneider Hall and have people like you because you're acting like a fucking idiot.
And here's the problem. They think it works because some people do like it. Some people do. There's a minority of the Democratic voter that likes that, like, weird, like, Obama light, very formal, very, like, lots of, like, buzzwords and collaboration and communication and cooperation and compromise and corny, like they love all of that, but it's a very small subsection. And just because they're like your little, you know, what is it called on Facebook, the super fan or whatever, right? Like, because you're getting love from the same 20 people, just because the same people who go on whatever Delaware Liberal or whatever like what you're putting down, does not mean that if you go door to door, people are not going to close the door and be like, what the hell is wrong with her? Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, why is she smiling like that? Why is she shaking her head so much? Like, it's weird. It's not normal. Like, And I don't know, it's like a Democrat problem, I guess, because Republicans will just lie, a lot of them. And they'll just lie and tell people what they want to hear. And like, they'll also just be very brutally honest about their bigotry and their biases around people. And like, that makes a certain group comfortable. But seeing someone like Zohran come out here, I'm that kind of Democrat. Like, I identify with that kind of Democrat. Affordable childcare, transit that works, common sense solutions to affordable housing, to like, he had one video he put out about like the cost of street cart food and permitting and how the permitting process is handled by the city, and it's people are not able to get their permits, so the cost of their goods is higher.
Yeah, like, bring halal back to like $5 or whatever.
Eight bucks, I think he said. Yeah, it's like, guys, can we actually do something instead of fighting each other? Like, can we put a little effort into, I don't know, protecting immigrants from ICE in Delaware instead of fighting people like Sean Lynn and me because you don't like that we talked on a podcast, or you don't like that we could introduce bills that you think your constituents won't like and we make you look bad? Like, can we move past that?
Yeah, you looking bad is within your control. Just look better. Stop doing the things that are embarrassing and make you look like a petty dipshit. Like, you don't have to do that stuff.
And, like, I think what is effective right now is someone like Zohran, who's energizing, who is principled, who has a track record. Because a lot of times it's like, oh, well, who are you? You just showed up. You don't know how to do anything. You don't know how to work with Republicans. You don't have a track record. He's been working with Republicans and Democrats in the state legislature in New York. He's delivered for his district. He's represented a very diverse part of the city. So he has that experience. And he's bringing exciting ideas that he actually has a plan to get done. Because, you know, they always like to be like, well, how are you going to pay for that? How are you going to pay for it? How are you going to pay for it?
So your dumb voice is now. How are you going to pay for it? Where's the money going to come from? How are you going to pay for it?
How are you going to pay for it?
See?
Right? So he has a plan for that. People are excited about people like him. They're not excited about Cuomo. They're not excited about Eric Adams. They're not excited about the Chuck Schumers.
It's a great point because, yeah, the thing that's hurt Democrats across the country, especially in places like Milton and other places, is that they act like what we just described. So going down there and acting like it in front of people who are like, I don't have time for this nonsense. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll find out soon enough. Everyone, thanks for listening. Continue to follow the story with the inmates that are being moved around and retaliated against. We're going to continue following it because it's very, very exciting for me. And it's actually something that's motivating me, as a matter of fact. So keep on listening. We'll speak to you soon. Left is best.